Greetings, I'm Bill Plaatke, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Katie Curran O'Malley, who is Executive Director of the Women's Law Center of Maryland. And Katie's here today to talk to us about the various things that women should be looking out for, as well as what resources are available for those who have legal problems. So, Katie, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here again.
First of all, for those of our listeners who did not get our previous show, could you please tell us a little bit about the Women's Law Center?
Sure. You know, the Women's Law Center has been in existence for 53 years. We became a 501c3 in 1973. But before that, the whole idea behind the Women's Law Center began in 1971 when there was a group of law students who were at the University of Maryland School of Law that were upset about the ways that women were being treated through the Maryland courts, whether it was employment discrimination, custody, divorce issues, and certainly issues of intimate partner violence. So they formed this very casual law group, if you will, that decided they were going to start taking on cases involving discrimination. One of the first ones that they did take on, and they successfully took on, was a case of a woman who was a symphony harpist at the Baltimore Symphony, and she was, they were saying that she was disqualified from receiving unemployment benefits even though she was pregnant, because the pregnancy didn't qualify as a reason to get these benefits. And so that was Orner versus the Board of Appeals. And that was one of the cases, and they handled another case involving a woman who was at Bethlehem Steel, and she was being discriminated against because of her sex as well. And so they were successful in that case. They then published a Legal Rights in Marriage and Divorce publication to talk about the ways that women were not being treated fairly in the courts. And so that happened again 53-plus years ago. We had some great women like Susan Elgin, Professor Susan Leviton, Judge Katie O'Farrell Friedman, Sally Gold, as all sort of women who were and still are great lawyers that founded the passion really behind our law center. You know, the mission statement says that we are ensuring physical safety, economic security, and autonomy of women throughout our state. So we do that through direct legal services when it comes to victims of intimate partner violence in protective order cases, as well as divorce and custody. We have a program for foreign-born victims of intimate partner violence to help them get legal status separate from their abuser while they're here in our country. We have two hotlines, an employment law hotline and a family law hotline. We have a legislative agenda, so every year when the session starts, we work with legislators to promote laws that, again, you know, are in consistent with our mission of physical safety, economic security, and autonomy for women.
Great. How can someone find out more information about the center?
The Women's Law Center of Maryland, they can reach out to us here directly at our office. The number is 410-321-8761, and we can then refer them to either one of the hotlines, the employment law hotline or the family law hotline, and also refer them to an advocate if they are seeking services for a protective order or looking for an attorney for a divorce and or custody case. And again, with our immigration program, if they need services through the program that we have, it's called MADOVI, we can refer them to that advocate and lawyer as well.
Okay, great, thank you. And I guess your job as executive director is to make sure everything works, right?
My job is everybody's job. My good friend, Michelle Seary, who was the former executive director, you know, when I was talking to her before I had started, I said, you know, can you kind of give me a day-to-day run-in of what your job is? And she said, your job's everybody's job. So you basically have to be sort of, you know, you have to be on top of what's happening through all of our programs. Again, you know, we have the specific programs that I just already talked about, but then also making sure that we have our grants are being followed up on so that we're making sure we apply for the grants in a timely fashion for our funding, looking for, you know, other sources of funding, which is something nonprofits are always doing, especially in light of the budgets that have been, you know, looking pretty bleak. The state budget, as well as now the federal budget with COVID funding, is kind of drying up. So a lot of nonprofits received additional funding through COVID monies, and that's not going to be available for fiscal year 26. So, you know, always looking for other supporters for the great work that we do here and for our attorneys to continue this great and essential work that they do each and every day. So that's part of the job. The legislative advocacy is certainly a big part of it. And then we also are a part of the judicial selections process for every court, for every level of court in the entire state of Maryland. The Women's Law Center will interview every candidate, whether it's for a district court position, a circuit court position, or one of the appellate courts. And that's a lot of work, but we take it very seriously because we think it's extremely important that the issues that we deal with that are, you know, affecting our clients, that the judges have a good understanding of what these issues are. And, you know, it is the Women's Law Center of Maryland, but we represent men as well. We represent any person who is a victim of intimate partner violence.
And so the if someone has an issue, no matter what their income, they can call you folks?
Yeah. You know, depending on what program that they are seeking. And then we also, as other counties, do a program called Judicare, which is where we match up individual looking for representation in divorce and custody cases that fall within a certain income level, below a certain income level. We match them up with attorneys that will do a representation for them in a low bono manner, and those attorneys are paid a significantly lower fee than they normally would charge, but they do it, and these people would not have an attorney if it weren't for that program. There's a Judicare program for every county. For Baltimore County, we run the program through the Women's Law Center.
That's great. That's great. And the attorneys would be from the law center, or they would be volunteers?
They would be lawyers that we actually get to be on the list. So we would seek out these attorneys that say that they would be willing to accept this lower fee, and then we hook those people up with the individuals that call in. So we have our own attorneys. We have three attorneys that do divorce and custody through the Women's Law Center, but because there's such a huge demand, this Judicare program, which there is one in every county in the state, is very, very helpful because there's we can have a larger list of people, lawyers, to pull from that can represent people. And you do much better in court when you have an attorney.
Right, right. Let's talk about some of your activities and services a little bit more that you've mentioned. Protective orders.
Yes.
What protective orders are out there, and when should somebody think about the need for one?
So a protective order is an order that you go, there's two phases for it. So if you are being abused by an intimate partner or a family member, because it's also for individuals that are not only just intimate partners, but if you have a family member that you're not an intimate partner with, but you are related by blood, you can file for a protective order. And in the protective order, you have the first stage is to show if you're eligible for the protective order, and that again is done through either testifying that you are married to the person, were formerly married to the person, are related by blood, have a child with the person, and or dated the person within the past year and had a sexual relationship with that person. So those are eligibility. And so if you fall within that and then you allege that the person has committed an act of abuse, and an act of abuse could be a threat of violence, a serious threat of violence by perhaps, pointing a gun at someone, or, you know, has a knife and threatens one with that, or threatens to do that and has the means to be able to carry out that threat, or in fact does physically assault you, punch, hit, kick, spit, any kind of sexual offense. Even if you're not related by blood or marriage or any of those other things that I said, if you have been sexually assaulted by a complete stranger, you can get a protective order. So you then tell the judge one-on-one, because it's called a, you know, the temporary order, the reason for why you feel as though you're in danger. The judge can either grant it or deny it. There's only one party that testifies, and that's the abused person, the petitioner. If the judge grants that, then the sheriff or police department within the jurisdiction is charged with serving the alleged abuser, and that usually takes, it should just take a week. In some counties where there are more people, and like a jurisdiction like Baltimore County, sometimes it can take several weeks. But once the individual is served with the temporary order, then they can come, and they're called the respondent. They come to court, and they can either consent to the order and agree and say, fine, I will stay away, I will vacate the house, I will, you know, there's all kinds of relief that can be granted. I will, the house, they can be ordered to vacate, they can be ordered to surrender a vehicle, they can be told to have certain visitation with their biological children if that's an issue. They can be ordered to pay emergency family maintenance if that is an issue within the two parties. And that can be enforced for up to a year, where they are to stay away from the individual and to not commit any further acts of abuse, to not call or contact unless there's a provision for texting for child visitation issues. So that's kind of a, in a nutshell, what a protective order is.
And I guess I guess the best thing is if somebody is thinking that they might need a protective order would be to call the law center and talk to someone about it.
Exactly. Yep. We've got people here. We have advocates and people that can let you know if that's something that would be safe or beneficial for you, if you feel as though you need protection, and the courts can provide that. Like I said, it can be in effect for a year, and if it's violated, that can be a criminal charge. So if somebody is ordered through a protective order, a final, to stay away from a petitioner, and they violate that by either calling, texting, showing up at the person's home or other places that are in the order, and either commits another act of abuse or doesn't, but just by simply violating the order, showing up at places where they are ordered to stay away from, and they can be arrested and charged with a crime.
Great. Thank you. I know that in terms of immigration law, you folks, as you mentioned earlier, have various programs to help folks that are in a situation because of their immigration. Is that something that you folks have is there a lot of demand for that at this point? I guess you've seen a lot more than recently.
We have approximately over 300 cases right now. You know,
wow.
The immigration process is very, very lengthy. You know, so I have a feeling, based on things that are being said in the news, that more people are reaching out. So, you know, the project provides representation to foreign-born victims of domestic violence, intimate partner violence, by you know, interim U visas applications, as protective orders they can do. There's VAWA self-petitions, VAWA vouchered spouse waivers. You know, a lot of these remedies would require that the victim also press criminal charges in some cases. So there's a lot of details and nuances to those types of filings. So if anybody is interested, they can call and we can refer them to our advocate and our attorney, who both work very, very hard on these cases and get great results for their clients. We're very proud of our Madovi program.
That's great. That's wonderful. And let's underline that again. Anyone is eligible for that if they are foreign born.
Right. And they're also victims of intimate partner violence.
Right. Unfortunately, though, Katie, we've reached about the end of the time we have. Could you give us that contact information one more time, please?
Certainly, yes. It's the Women's Law Center. We're located in Baltimore County, right by the Towson Circuit Court, and our phone number is 410-321-8761. You can also look us up you know, on the internet. Our website right now is being redone, but there are still, there's still information on our website right now that you can look up through the, just looking up the Women's Law Center of Maryland.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for in Living in Baltimore. I want to thank our guest, Katie Kern O'Malley, who's Executive Director of the Women's Law Center, for being our guest today. Thank you, Katie. Keep up your good work for all of us.
Thanks, Bill. We will.
And for Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.